Night Rider, a shadowy flight into the dangerous world of a man that does not exist.
Might as well put on some music.
I am the voice of Night Industry 2000's microprocessor, KITT for easy reference, a kit if you prefer. What would you like to hear?
Welcome to Champa and Klein, the Night Rider Years, a podcast by two friends who share a love of classic 80s television. I'm your host, Dave Champa.
I am your other host, Greg Klein.
And Greg, welcome back. Welcome back. I bet everybody who was listening to last week's episode was really hoping they were going to hear Greg introduce himself, but it was just me doing a stupid little recording before a two-year-old episode where we sounded like garbage.
That was a fun one, though. I listened to it again. I'm like, I remember that. We talked about some fun things.
It was fun, though. But do you see what I was saying when I mentioned that, like, I feel like the level of confidence wasn't quite there yet because we were only 30 episodes new into the podcasting world?
Yeah.
I don't know. It just, to me, it felt like we were really just like trying to figure out where that format was going to go. And obviously it took us.
We were in the beta stages. It's fine.
I did realize, though, if you listen to the end of that episode, we do talk about MacGyver. So we were rolling MacGyver through as of around episode 30.
That was pre-everything. That was pre-MacGyver, pre-1440 as well. It's before we really went mad.
And as of this recording, actually, it was almost exactly 2 years. I think we recorded at the end of October 2016.
Yeah.
Was that episode.
Exactly.
I had a lot of fun with that episode, and I thought that was a good idea. And I realized, like I had said in the like that little pre-recording, we have 59 episodes of Blow Your Mind that aren't really anywhere to be found.
I know. There's this whole dark hole.
Yeah.
I was trying to say dark web.
Dark hole.
It's on the dark web. No, but yeah, of all these episodes we have that we just haven't figured out how to, well, really, we haven't paid to put them all back online.
Right, exactly. Yet. Exactly. So it kind of, and it really clicked because I was going to go without an episode last week. But it was like, wait, hold on. It's like, we have a Halloween episode. We've got 59 episodes that we haven't put back up anywhere from our inception years, or blow your mind years, if you will. It's like, why don't I just pull something from that? So I thought about it, and I was like, that's a really great idea.
It's way better than my idea of just listening to the electric coils on your stove heating up. I was just going to do that. Like, oh, turn it on. Let them, like, heat up.
You're just going to record it for 60 minutes?
Yeah, get them, like, hear them kinking and creaking and turn it off. Let them cool down. I was going to do that for, like, 60 minutes. Pulling up an old episode is a better idea than that.
I think it's a better episode. Although it did lend the question that we were texting, should we have done that one? Or I actually had the thought of playing the Halloween Nights episode of Mullets and Memories.
That's too soon.
You think it's too soon?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because that was less than a year ago, I think.
Yeah, we just finished MacGyver. I kind of don't want to deal with any of it.
All right, fair enough. That's okay. So I know that we ended up canceling like literally at the 11th hour last week just because you hadn't been feeling great all day. I just, you know, myriad of personal issues got in the way of last week, and we just couldn't quite make anything happen right. I assume you're feeling better.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Good,
yeah, I was just tired, wasn't feeling great all week, and it just kind of like, I can't do it.
Yeah, well, we're heading into November now.
What? So,
yeah, I know.
How? No.
We are recording on October 29th. This is the recording date for this episode.
What the hell happened?
I don't know what happened to October. It was a slog of a month.
In the summer, I'm like, I like the summer, but I was looking forward to October. I love this time of year.
I do, too.
And like, here it is. It's like, whoop, they're gone.
Yep.
Bye.
Yep, and it's tough too. Like, so the way that like Kristen gets paid on a monthly basis, so it's tough to budget that. So when we realize that like she gets paid the last day of every month, when the last day is actually a weekday,
yeah,
like to wait till that last day can be tough. So she'll get paid this coming Wednesday.
So this is interesting. Something I've been working on. I'm just recently going to a biweekly paycheck, which I was like at my previous job, but it's been a year and now it's changed. It's cool, but. when does your bank tally up your interest? Because it would be best to do it just after she gets paid and not like the day before.
Oh, I actually have no idea.
So that you get the maximum amount of interest.
I have no idea.
That would be nice.
Do you know when your bank does it?
I think at the beginning of the month. That's when I get my statements.
Oh, I don't pay attention
to
that.
The 4th, yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I was just thinking, I'm trying to like schedule all my credit card payments and everything up so that I will have the most amount of money in the bank when they run my interest and I get the maximum return.
I should start looking at that because I'm on a biweekly basis right now at Target, although hopefully I'll be transitioning within the month to a new job. I had an interview today for a job, and then I have a final interview for a job I had last week this coming Wednesday night
for the septic tank cleaning.
Septic tank cleaning. Yeah, I'll be working like dirty jobs,
but like the manual one, because like you can't get trucks in. This is the one you were telling me
about.
Have to do it by hand.
Yeah,
with buckets.
I actually have to remove the septic cover myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to expect me to do that.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. Well, you just go in there and you pull it out, but then you got to empty the tank by hand.
Yeah, I have to physically get in. Uh-huh. I have to supply my own galoshes to get in there. So it'll be interesting to see what I find. But yeah, I have to do it. I have to do it myself. They're going in for my final interview. It's like my swim test.
Uh-huh.
It's basically that's what the final interview is.
I see.
They're going to put me in a septic tank and cover it.
Okay.
And just see if I can get
like
myself
a stress
out of it.
Test, you know, just to see if you can do it.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
I'm really excited for you. I mean, change in, you know, employment is always fun if it's, you know, a positive change and you're really looking forward to the job. And I think you'll just be a great fit.
Yeah. I mean, it pays about $4 an hour,
mm-hmm.
For about 20 hours a week.
Okay.
So I think that'll be a good career change for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking forward to taking that venture.
Really positive, Dave.
Trying to look at it with a positive attitude, Greg.
You got it.
That's really not what I'm doing, guys. Or is it? I guess you'll have to wait and find out if I get the job in the next couple of weeks. So yeah, we're kind of hoping to be in a transitional phase, career-wise, financially speaking. Hopefully, we can kind of turn that corner. But I'm looking forward to the next couple months. I think November's looking for a good month. Greg and I are planning our first annual boys retreat. The week of November 9th, we'll be going away November 9th, 10th, and 11th. God only knows what we're going to be doing.
It's going to be fun. We're just going to be stupid. We haven't had a weekend together since college.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely not. We're going to do adventures with Michael and Kit.
Yeah.
We're going to take Kit along on the road with us. So we'll have pictures of Kit along the road at various main places.
Yeah, you can follow him on Instagram. Just follow us, and then we'll post photos periodically.
Just follow the hashtag Adventures with Michael and Kit. It's a really long one, but I don't care.
I think it probably doesn't exist yet. So
or Adventures with Kit. I haven't decided yet, but we'll figure that one out.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, anything else going on with you?
No, things are pretty good. I can't believe it's almost November. We're hosting Thanksgiving again this year, so we'll
talk
about that.
Nice.
As we get closer. Nah, doing fun things around the house, like insulating the rim joists. Doesn't that sound like a good time?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No idea what that means, but that's okay.
Spent the past couple of days putzing around doing that. You know, things around the house and stuff and things.
Things around the house and things.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Well, Greg, would you like to get into some poll results?
Oh boy! Yes.
From 2 weeks ago.
Right. So we did skip a week. So everyone, thank you for your patience. We are going to be talking about our previous poll questions, which
yes.
I don't remember what they were.
So this was way back. It was 2 weeks ago. So this was from episode 7 of the Knight Rider years. If you notice in your RSS feed for the Knight Rider years, I didn't actually number last week's episode because I don't want it to be part of the official continuity of the Knight Rider years. So if you look back at episode 7, I asked this question and then I put it out for a poll during the week. So the first question was, who is more likely to have revelations about life that will lead to bouts of crying?
Yes.
Now, if I recall, I think you actually said Kit. Did you not?
I believe I did.
I can't remember. If anyone remembers from episode 7, let us know. I don't remember what Chris said.
Holy shit. Yeah, I don't remember what I said.
I think you said Kit.
We didn't keep track of this?
No, definitely not. We'll have to keep track of it from now on.
I guess so.
Greg, if you did indeed vote Kit, the votes were with you. But it was actually a lot closer than I thought. 60% of our votes said that Kit would be more likely to have revelations about life that would lead to crying. And 40% said that Michael would be the one. Now, I need you guys to listen to us through the end of the episode, because we got a hotline message that is directly related to this. And the reason we're going to hold it until the end of the episode is because there's a moment at the very end that would lead perfectly into this life revelation that Kit may have. So stick with us to the very end, because you're not going to regret it. It's a phenomenal voicemail. I will say that when I first listened to it, I may or may not have gotten a little teary at thinking about the possibilities of Kit having this life revelation.
I think it's great. I can't wait to talk
about it at the end.
And I can't remember what my choice was. I think part of it was Kit would lead to bouts of crying, but he physically couldn't cry. He would just get really depressed.
Yes.
And Michael would cry just because. I don't know.
Right.
I can't remember. Wow, it was 2 weeks ago. And I have since listened to that episode just to check it out.
Oh, God, you did. That's right.
I did, and I completely don't. Well, what was I doing? I think I was cooking at the same time, so I wasn't really paying attention.
All right.
I just had it on.
All right, well, let's just assume you said Kit.
Sure.
I feel like you said Kit. If anyone remembers who's listening to the show, just let us know and remind us, because I'm not going to go back and listen.
I won't go back now, no.
All right, so the next question we opened up was, who is more likely to be a craft beer snob, Michael or Devin? And I believe you said Devin.
I got it all confused, because I brought Kit in there, too.
Yeah.
But I bought Devin in, I think it was for, like, the brand, you know,
yes,
for the image. Kit, though, for the construction of the beer, like the provenance of the beer.
Yep.
And Michael will just drink like Genesee Cream Ale.
He'd be the Natty Light.
Yeah, Natty Light.
Whatever's in the freezer.
Red Dog, Ice House, which I love both of those.
I actually don't mind an Ice House.
We're going to have to find some of that
trip. But I think you said the majority, though, you had said Devin would be the one who would be very particular about what kind of beer he would drink. And
yes,
again, the listeners agreed with you. 62% said Devin would be the craft beer snob, and 38% said Michael. Didn't get any reasonings behind why Michael would be that high or why people chose Michael, but Devin is definitely the more beer snobby of the beer snobs.
You know, I think Michael comes across as kind of, you know, I don't know, shallow maybe sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think there's this real depth to him.
I agree.
If you can open those doors, open those deep gazing eyes and just gaze into his gazing head.
Yes.
And then you'll go into the mind of Michael Knight, and it's just...
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know what it is, because he's only 2 years old.
That's true. That's true. He is. He's still a baby.
2 months old?
He's
2 weeks
still Michael Knight. Do you think... Now, hold on. Do you think... And I think we may have talked about this. Do you think he still has Michael Long memories?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
That's true, because
he's Michael Long with a new face.
He's referred to himself as his... He's talked about his past.
Right.
Okay, never mind.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I just don't pay attention. See, this is why we've talked about this. I like when you watch better for the details. I'm doing the notes, so I miss huge chunks of stuff.
Yeah, he talks about his past a lot, and you learn a little bit more and more. And we had those discussions about his whole resume is just redacted.
Oh, right.
Like, it's heavy with ink.
Devin's is even more redacted.
Yeah.
Because of his backstory of breaking out of two German prison camps.
They didn't talk about the details of him murdering the entire guard staff or anything. With his bare hands.
Just, like, snaps all their necks.
Like Reggie and Archer.
He goes all Michael Myers and just starts, like, snapping necks crushing skulls.
Breaking spines.
Just quickly, before we jump into the episode, I saw the new Halloween.
Yes.
There's a curb stomp.
Are you kidding?
In Halloween. I'm not gonna go any further than that.
Jesus,
there is
seriously?
Absolutely brutal curb stomp that Michael does to a character in the movie.
That's awful.
It is awful, but at the same time, you're just like, holy crap.
No, no.
It's good.
On movies, though, I recently saw Venom.
How was that?
Well, you know how I'm not really into comic book
no,
movies.
No, I know.
And I went to see it because my cousins were going to go see it.
Yep.
And I went to see it really because Tom Hardy was in it.
Oh, sure.
I didn't like it.
A lot of people seem to not like it either.
Pretty stupid.
You're not alone. I haven't seen it. I did see Halloween two, three nights ago,
uh-huh,
but I haven't seen anything else probably in a couple months in the theaters. But yeah. Well, I'm not surprised that you didn't like it at all.
Yeah. Though it had a lot going against it for me in the beginning anyway.
Right.
Just as a movie. Okay.
Do you know Venom at all?
No, I mean, no, I don't. But I I don't.
I don't either.
No, I don't.
So I was not going to try to
engage. But that's okay. But as not knowing it, it still didn't make me want to learn about it.
All right. I get you. But would you like to learn about this next episode?
Yes.
Are you ready to talk about it?
I am.
All right, guys. Here we go. Season 1, Episode 9. Trust doesn't rust.
God, that sounds like a MacGyver title.
It really does.
Trust doesn't rust, MacGyver. He's going to be in Rhode Island this weekend.
Oh, he is.
And he even posted on his Instagram page, if, for those of you who don't know, we're talking about none other than Mr. Michael DeBar.
Oh, that's right.
He's a fantastic fellow. You should follow him. Follow him on Instagram.
He's the most positive person on Instagram.
Such great stuff.
He really does.
But he'll be at the Rhode Island Comic Con this weekend, along with Richard Dean Anderson and Danny Trejo and a plethora of other folks that I just don't remember.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm hoping we get some good pictures of both of them on the stage, because I'd love to see it. I'm just...
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, Greg. Here we go. So we open with two men. Tony and the Rev, as he is called.
Vroom, vroom.
Through the episode. He is late. We realize he's known as the Rev because he starts spewing a lot of not Bible verses, but a lot of you're all going to hell type moments as we get closer to the end of the episode. So these two guys are at the future site of the Knight Museum of Technology, and they're getting ready to break in.
Which is interesting. The Knight Museum of Technology, which I didn't know existed.
Well, if you see from the sign, it's weather-worn, old, and beaten down. So clearly the Knight Museum of Technology decided that they weren't going to go anywhere.
It's like the Carousel of Tomorrow at Disney World.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So they're gonna break in. They're going to steal some stuff. And,
fine.
So this next scene I thought was interesting. So we cut to Michael, and he's heading towards the lab because he wants to secure it before the city takes possession of it in the morning, according
right,
to him.
Right,
which I was really, really confused about.
So yeah, he's driving to the lab at 2 a.m. to make sure everything's okay before
right.
the city takes over.
Yeah.
Because I guess the foundation or after Wilton Knight, you know, bit the dust.
Yeah.
I guess maybe there was something saying that all of his property goes to the city, or it was bequeathed to the city. I don't know. We'll probably never find out.
We probably won't, and I hope we do, but
what
we won't.
What city was it? Did we ever learn?
I don't think
we should actually go to that city for real and dig through the records and see if we can find anything.
I don't know if we ever learned that. We should.
What happened to the museum?
I want to know what happened to the Knight Museum of Technology. Tell me where it is. I'm running out of time.
But they took it literally, and since it's the Knight Museum, there's no lights in it. So you can't see any of the displays.
My God, could you imagine? And people are just like, "The Knight Museum." I think I feel a car. I think there's a car in here. I don't know what this is. I don't know. There's no lights. Wait, right. Yes, there is. We're at the Knight Museum
right.
of Technology.
Yeah.
It's supposed to simulate night.
Or the Knight Museum, N-I-G-H-T, is a museum down the street. And people always get them mixed up. It's a museum about nighttime.
So I love this because Kit makes a comment. It's like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
on the way. And Kit makes a comment about how they could have done this in the afternoon, but Michael had to rendezvous with a woman named Rosalind.
I know.
Once again, Michael put off his activities and his job to go have sex with a woman.
Of course.
Which leads into the conference. Don't they have a conversation about why Michael just won't settle down?
Pretty much. You should really settle down, Michael.
And it was like...
It's like, it's the thrill of the chase.
Oh,
or something.
Michael.
I like how Kit is actually aggressively calling him out on being such a slut.
Because Kit can't stop him.
You're right.
He can't stop him from doing this. He's just trying to be like, Michael, if we would just focus on our job, we might get things done quicker and we wouldn't be traveling at 2:30 in the morning.
Okay, this is a total diatribe. This
what
is going to go total. Okay,
got?
So remember a couple weeks ago, a couple episodes ago, whatever, we were talking about wanting to see an episode where Michael doesn't leave Kit, like he's trapped, like on an airplane tarmac.
A single setting location where he's only in Kit.
What if it's a whole episode that it's an intervention with Michael and Kit refuses to let him out?
He won't unlock the doors.
He sweats him out over like a week.
He refuses to feed him.
Right, right. But there's like food in the glove compartment, or he pops out like trinkets every now and then. But they're having like deep heart to heart, and Michael goes into like this horrible existential, like, you know, heat stroke dream.
Michael, I've told you more and more and more and more. You need to stop seeing all these women. I'm not going to let you out until you relent.
And Kit like is almost trying to brainwash him, but Michael like is like stripped down to his undies because it's so damn hot. And Kit keeps fucking with the air conditioning and the heat, trying to like break him into being like.
There's your episode right there.
That would be amazing.
That's the one we need. That is the one we need.
And then, yeah, I might tag on a little bit more once we get to the end of the episode in the voicemail.
So we get into the warehouse. The Rev, Tony and the Rev have broken into the warehouse, and it's empty.
Damn it.
And they walk it around, and they're looking for light. So they find a light switch, or not a light switch. It's like a giant power switch. And it leads into Lab 3. And on the power switch, it just says, danger. Okay, we know what, like, it's like real. So they flip it on and it starts like sparking, but they can't see it. So like the light switch is like sparking, and we go inside Lab 3 and we just see the lights going across what appears to be Kit. But it's like the reverse sound. I don't know how, I didn't pull
it. Was it really? I didn't even
catch. But it was like
that.
The reverse of what Kit sounds like.
Oh,
it was like the reverse of the wah 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 wah. Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Is that what it was?
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
I bet you there's a whole bunch of like footage that they tried different sounds.
Yes.
Babies crying.
No, that one doesn't work very well. Somebody taking a dump. No, that one doesn't work very well either.
Okay.
Greg, what is actually inside Lab 3 that these two dimwits unwittingly reactivate?
Out of the dark. Moving forward at a creepy slow pace.
Yes.
Is none other than Kit's doppelganger.
What is
an exact replica.
Yes. What is his name?
K-A-R-R.
Do you remember what that stands for?
Knight Automated Rolling Robot.
Yeah, you did. You did roving.
Was it roving?
It was roving robot.
I thought it was rolling robot.
I think it was roving.
I don't know now. Shit.
I think it was roving. I'll find out for the next episode.
Okay.
I'm not going to look at it right now.
I think it was rolling robot.
So... apparently Carr has been sitting in storage for God knows how long, and he's like just stalking these two guys in the lab, and we cut back to Michael and Kit, who have arrived at the lab to see that the door is open.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael gets out and Kit starts following behind him, and Kit starts talking about getting these unusual readings. He says something about having sensor readings of his own telemetry, like he's having strange feelings, and Michael's like, well, that's weird because you having feelings is a problem.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be having feelings about any of this right now.
You're quite right, Michael.
And so...
I am devoid of all emotion.
Just I keep thinking about that voicemail.
We're getting there.
I know. So I actually loved this scene. So Michael goes in to the lab, and it's just complete silence. It's just Michael with the flashlight. There's no music.
Uh-huh.
You just hear his footsteps going through like the empty warehouse. And the only the first time you hear any sort of music is when he brings the flashlight across to the guard unconscious on the ground.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was a really cool like set that atmosphere up because you don't
it
hear
was
anything.
Spooky.
It was really really well shot.
Then Michael shines the flashlight forward and he sees what looks like a scene out of Hellraiser, and he sees Carr there and Pinhead in the driver's seat.
Welcome to my nightmare, Michael. Or your nightmare, Michael, whatever.
Such beautiful sights to show you.
I love those movies.
They're great.
They're fantastic. There's like 9 of them now, but that's
yeah.
Okay. So the lab door opens, and Michael doesn't know that it's Carr. The Kit lookalike like peels out with the two guys in the car, Tony and the Rev, and just drives away.
Vroom, vroom.
And I think that's where we call it for the end of the first act.
Well,
right?
it pulls out in front of Kit because it makes it outside. Michael's chasing it, and Kit's like, "What was that?" You know, or something like something. I forget the phrase.
Yeah, I don't.
But
know.
Yeah, you basically that's the time you see both of the cars together. This is gonna get confusing.
Yeah, I know.
See the car.
Yes.
Driving car. By the car Kit.
The car Kit and the car. And then we cut to commercial. So we come back to what I am going to now refer to as morning meeting. Because we're going to see it every episode now.
Okay.
At the morning meeting, Devin informs Michael that Carr was actually the original prototype built by Wilton Knight before Kit was built.
And I love how they describe his personality. He was described to be... Kit was designed to protect human life.
Correct.
Carr was designed to protect itself.
And I wrote, but why? Oh, probably for an episode like this.
self-preservation. Like, yeah, it would do everything to protect itself.
And it, I mean, obviously, we know, when we get to the end, we'll talk about it. But, you know, nobody believed Michael for a second at the end of this episode, mm-hmm. which he knew going into this that this is exactly what was going to happen because right. of Carr's self-preservation. Mm. So Michael, and I asked the same question before Michael asked this. Michael asks, why wasn't I ever told of this prototype? And Devin's like, well, we didn't really see a need because we thought the car was dismantled.
So this thing, like, Devin, you didn't know that car wasn't dismantled?
Right. Right. You assumed the role of Wilton Knight after he passed at the foundation. You don't think Wilton would have said, oh, by the way, that prototype I've been working on, it's in lab 3.
Or what if like Wilton just couldn't bring himself to dismantling Carr? It's like, it's his Frankenstein monster. He can't do it.
I actually had that thought that yeah. like he couldn't bring himself to dismantle it. Maybe told Devin that it's been taken care of before he died.
Right. And was trying to sort it out in his own mind. But it seems like Wilton died pretty abruptly. It was expected, but like, you know,
it came pretty quickly.
Yeah,
absolutely,
overnight.
Absolutely. So we cut back to Carr, and he pulls off the side of the road, and he gets the guys out, and this is the first time we really start hearing him talk, and he starts explaining to the men that Wilton Knight apparently at some point turned on Carr, like not turned him on, but like turned on him, like went against him, and attempted to actually shut him down, and he succeeded obviously, but didn't dismantle him. And he asks the two men, I love this scene, he's like, I see that you two are here. He's like, I am here to serve you. How can I serve you, men? What do you want? I have checked the data on basic human desires. What would you like to do? Eat? Drink? Make babies?
He says reproduce, right?
Like, what do you... Oh,
make babies?
And so that's why he realizes that Carr is now going to serve these two men, because they're the guys who reactivated Carr.
Well, yeah, because they're talking about basically Carr starts talking to them as Carr's driving, essentially. And they say, we got to slow down or else we're going to go back to prison. And Carr's like, prison? What's prison?
You know, like the slammer.
The slammer. They never let you out. He's like, I do not want to go to the slammer. Like, it's amazing.
It's so good. And so we haven't mentioned this yet, but the guy who voices Carr is like one of the most well-known voice actors, Peter Cullen, who is probably most well-known for Optimus Prime in the Transformers animated series.
It sounds very similar.
And you can so hear it, because this was I think this was just before he got the job as Optimus Prime, but you can so hear it when he's talking as Carr. And I love this, because Carr thinks that he's one of a kind. He has no idea that Kit exists, because the guys say to him, like, oh, we saw another one.
I thought he did.
No, because Carr's the one. Carr says he thinks he's one of a kind, because, and much like Kit thought Kit was one of a kind, until they both saw each other.
Really? Oh, wow. Maybe I missed that part.
Because there's a line in the warehouse with the two men where Carr says that he is one of a kind.
Well, he's always said, he says, I'm one of a kind. I'm the prototype. And later he refers to Kit as a copy.
Yes.
And will be less than because he's a copy.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't know. I would assume that Carr knows of Kit, but Kit doesn't know of Carr.
Maybe that was what I was. That's what I was trying to say.
You know, honestly, I don't remember.
Kit thinks he's one of a kind until that moment that they come, that the cars come face to face.
That's right.
That's what it was.
Kit does know, think he's one of a kind. Carr knows there's another one because he's been locked up by Winston.
Wilton.
Wilton.
Winton.
Winston.
So, all right. So I love this next scene. So Carr takes them to get food, and they pull up to the fast food restaurant, and they pull up to the intercom system, and the guy starts taking the order, and Carr's like, who is that? Who is that man? Why is he so angry?
Because it's talking out of like at the chicken habit. It's talking out of like a fiberglass person, dummy thing.
It looks like one of those things from like the Nutcracker Prince. Like,
yes.
One of those. And he's just
looks like a Nutcracker soldier, just worse. And Carr doesn't believe it. What is this? Who is speaking?
And the guy on the other end of the intercom is clearly getting irritated because they're not placing the order. And Carr is picking up on this. And he's like, this man is becoming increasingly irritated. What should I do? And they're like, well, we got to order the food. What are we going to order? He's like, do not worry. I will keep you safe. I will take care of this. And he backs up and then plows through the intercom system and drives away.
It's amazing.
It's so good.
It's awesome. I love Carr. I almost think Carr is like my favorite character.
Oh, he's easily going to be one of my favorite recurring characters. Absolutely, 100%.
He's like the id. He just...
Yeah.
Not that he's impulsive, but he's just all about himself.
Right, exactly. So this is where I got confused, Greg. So this next scene is with Michael. He's a little worried about Kit because Michael thinks Kit is upset because now Kit knows he's not the only model.
Let's go over that line. Let's unpack that.
Michael thinks Kit's upset?
Right.
I know. Come on, man. Michael has feelings for Kit.
Michael does have feelings for Kit.
But Kit needs to keep reminding him that Kit doesn't feel.
Right. I'm just programmed like this.
Exactly. But I love this next part because Kit, contrary to what Michael thinks, knows that he is the superior model to Carr.
Yeah.
And I like that little bit that Kit kind of has that one-up because Carr thinks that he's got the one-up on Kit.
Yeah, Carr thinks he's better just because he's the original. I will always be the best.
Right, exactly. And I like that because then Kit's like, no, actually, I was built after him, so clearly I'm the superior model.
Yeah.
So we cut back to Carr. The cops are chasing Carr and the men. Michael, I don't actually know how Michael knew what they were talking about, but like he flips on the police radio, and he overhears that a car was... He doesn't even hear that a car was at the Three Ring, which is the restaurant. Mm-hmm. He just hears that something's happening at the Three Ring restaurant and the cops are in pursuit. But he didn't actually hear the cops refer to a Trans Am.
Really? Oh, I've been...
On the radio, on the police frequency. Uh-huh. He didn't actually hear them. And he's like, all right, Kit, buckle up. Here we go. And like he turns around and heads over.
He tells Kit to buckle up?
Maybe. How do you think Kit would buckle himself up? Do you think he just like buckles the passenger seat himself?
Yeah, shit, I don't know.
Just a thought. Greg.
Okay.
So, at the Three Ring restaurant, when Michael arrives, the cops surround Michael and attempt to arrest him because they see Kit matching the model, obviously.
Well, it's the same exact
car. It's the exact same car. Like, oh, well, that's it.
The license plate's different, dummies.
Right, exactly. And
why doesn't Kit's license plate say Kit? It says Knight.
Oh, my gosh, you're right. Because you think when Wilton built the second prototype, he built the Kit car, it was going to be his personal car, which is why he put his last name as the vanity plate, whereas Carr was just the prototype, so he wanted to distinguish it.
Do you think that Wilton Knight was hoping for a time when technology would become such that he could upload his consciousness into Kit?
Yes.
And forever live as a black Pontiac
Trans Am? Do you think that Wilton's consciousness is Kit, just with a different voice? Do you think he secretly uploaded his consciousness
and he was
into Kit before
he was
he
just
died?
Getting sicker because at night he would secretly upload more of himself, so there's just less and less of him.
So as he was dying, it was more because his consciousness was actually leaving his body.
Yeah.
I really like that.
I do too.
I really like that plot. I want to go with that. Okay. We're going to assume that Kit is Wilton Knight's consciousness. Done. I love it. So obviously, it's quickly the arrest is avoided. It is quickly derided that Kit is not the car that was involved in the smashing of the PA system.
That's correct. Oh, it's great.
Bonnie is installing a new tech in Kit. Do we know what it was? I don't know if she actually ever says it. Does she ever say what?
Yeah, it was some kind of laser. It was a laser out car sensors.
Because she's working on, she's working on a way to defeat Carr.
But you only have two shots.
Otherwise, it's going to deplete Kit's battery.
Yeah.
If you try to fire a third shot. So during this, Kit refers to something called Zeno's paradox.
Okay.
Which I didn't research, but basically what Zeno's paradox is. No, he says it. Kit says it. What Zeno's paradox is: what happens when an irresistible force meets an immovable object? That's what Zeno's paradox is. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, I don't know. Aren't you the all-knowing car?
I don't want to think about this.
Right.
I don't want to think about this.
This makes my brain hurt. It's almost like he asked that question because it's going to come into play at the end of the episode.
I guess, but it's a very, very flawed analogy.
How so? I'm just curious.
Oh, Kit and Carr compared to each other? I mean, they clearly say that Kit is better. So
yeah, that's true.
It's not a good analogy.
So are they saying that Carr is the irresistible force or Carr the immovable object?
Sure.
Who's the immovable object?
Okay.
Is he the irresistible force?
You got it.
Okay, awesome. So moving along. So the guys, the Tony and the Rev, they decide that rather than bring Carr back to the lab where they're going to deactivate him again, they're like, you know what? We could really make some money off of this, so let's go on a crime spree.
Sure.
Hence, we cut to the montage of the men fanning themselves with hundreds of dollars.
I know, because they keep robbing bank after bank or something, because Carr can just, you know...
Just, like, obliterate bank vaults.
Yeah, he's bulletproof, he's super fast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it, I guess having a good time, whatever. Yeah.
The guys are, like, you know, kissing their money, and they're, like, you know, they're all dressed up to the nines, and Carr can't enjoy it because he's a sentient being and has no idea what's going on.
He's not a sentient.
He's not sentient, because I'm an idiot. So that was a fun little montage. So we cut back to Greg, what you were just saying. So Bonnie has installed a laser on Kit, which she believes is going to fry Carr's electronics.
But Kit made some comment. It was like, is a bit of a tight fit.
Yes. She installed this huge laser because when she reveals...
Somewhere inside of
the
Kit.
When she reveals the laser before it gets installed, it's enormous.
I know.
So where she put that in Kit?
It's like losing a sponge inside somebody during surgery.
Because where does it fire? It fires out of the front. Does it fire out of the front scanner?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love Kit's line. That's a bit tight. Yes, because it's double the size of your hood.
I know, right? How does Kit feel tightness?
I know.
How does Kit
feel tightness? Yes, Greg, what were you going
to
say?
I was just wondering if Kit's seats were built to Michael's body specifications, or they're just stock Pontiac seats.
I think they're built to Michael's specifications.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they caress his body?
Yes. They're form-fitting. It's like a Tempur-Pedic. It's like a memory foam mattress.
So while Michael Long was in a coma, they measured his body for the seats? And
They measured his buttocks.
Mm-hmm.
They rolled him over. And
they did a body cast. They laid him on some like
measured the buttocks.
Uh-huh. Some modeling clay.
Absolutely. So the other thing is that this, they turns out that Bonnie says this, she mentions this, that not only does Carr have a weak spot, which is on the front scanner, but Kit has the exact same weak spot.
But yeah, okay, yes.
So
yes,
we
yes.
know now that Kit actually is not completely indestructible. There's one spot on both of those cars that if hit for 2 seconds, consistently, it will completely fry them and shut them down.
Well, that's convenient.
Isn't that something?
Why don't we just build an Achilles heel into our machine? Let's just purposely do that.
The most prominent factor of Kit's body, which is the front scanner with the red tracking lights, is his fucking weak spot. Well, cool. No, great.
But how human is that, not to trust technology to build a catastrophic flaw into something on purpose?
Right.
So that you can destroy it?
Yeah.
I mean, we're getting to that place with AI that...
You have to have a failsafe.
They must. I wonder if people are doing that.
That's probably what it was. I bet it was a failsafe.
Yeah.
In case a situation arose where Carr somehow becomes reactivated, you got to have a failsafe to shut him down.
Oh, God. Oh, you know, Kit's really valuable and all this stuff. Do you think that Kit has a self-destruct button so it doesn't get into enemy hands?
You make me cry.
Do you think that...
I don't want to think about this.
Do you think Kit can destroy himself, or would he tell Michael to do it?
Well, is this going to be like a Terminator scenario where Arnold can't self-terminate? Is this a scenario where the human has to be the one to do the bad deed?
Like, I don't want that power.
Like, yeah, will Kit be like, Michael, you know I can't self-terminate. You're going to have to be the one to push the button. Like, is that going to be... Oh, I'm going to start crying. Just thinking about this. Oh, God. I hate myself.
Oh, God. Oh, man. We're gonna just drag this out. We're going to pull... Oh, man. I would love to talk about Kit's, you know, sentience?
Sentience, yes.
Forever. I could do this forever.
Oh, God. Okay, so cut back to the thieves. Okay, so we know that Kit has 2 shots from the laser to hit right in the middle of the front scanner, and if he doesn't get the 2 shots in, the 3rd shot will kill Kit's battery.
Yeah.
So they have to make those 2 shots count. So we cut back to Tony and the Rev.
Vroom, vroom.
And they're plotting their next heist. Carr is basically like, guys, listen, I'm going to need some maintenance after what the shit you just put me through.
Yeah.
I'm going to need a little bit of a tune-up.
I need a skilled technician.
I need a cybernetic technician.
Oh, right.
And I'm like, huh. So I'm it's nice that they actually have a title for Bonnie, like that Bonnie is like a licensed cybernetic technician. So Carr knows, like, the only person who could effectively work on me is a cybernetic technician.
Perfect.
Now, the only cybernetic technician that we know is the one who's been working on the other car.
Uh-huh.
Ergo, you need to kidnap the cybernetic technician and bring her to me.
Mm, vis-a-vis, concordantly.
So, this next scene is very confusing for me because they end up following through with the plan to kidnap Bonnie anyway. The guys start talking and Carr is listening to them from afar.
Carr's like, I mean, I'm seeing a lot of parallels with HAL 9000 because I'm listening to Open the Podcast Doors, HAL.
Mm-hmm.
Another great podcast there out and about. They're doing a minute-by-minute recap of 2001's A Space Odyssey.
Which is on our boys' weekend watch list.
Stanley Kubrick. That movie's fantastic. Listen to the podcast. It's a really good time. But I keep thinking of Carr and Kit. Like, HAL. Like, HAL, Carr isn't watching their lips, but he's, like, zooming in and listening to them.
Right.
And it's, like, basically the Rev and
Tony.
The Rev, Vroom Vroom, and Tony,
yes,
are talking about, well, we'll tell Carr we're going to do this, and then we'll just ditch him.
Right. Much. Like, we'll buy him some spark plugs
We'll do one good job. We'll do one more job, buy him some spark plugs, and he'll be happy. That's what he says.
Right.
But Carr's listening, so he knows it's bullshit.
Right, exactly. But then Tony comes up and is like, all right, we'll go get her. And so he follows through with the plan anyway and kidnaps Bonnie.
Yeah. I don't know. I think because he knows that he has to. I'm very confused too.
It was
right.
Very bizarre. So yeah, Carr breaks in. Tony kidnaps Bonnie, takes her back to the hideout. While Carr is driving away with Bonnie in the passenger seat, Michael jumps onto Carr's roof, and the car drives away with Michael on the roof.
Right.
Which then ensues in a chase because Michael gets on and says, "Kit, you need to come get me." Kit chases after Carr. We get a really cool car chase where, like, both the cars are next to each other. Michael jumps from Carr to Kit, gets in the driver's seat, and they both drive off after Carr.
Yeah, Carr and Kit are talking to each other.
Yes.
Yeah, like, Carr's like, I'm the prototype. I'm better than you.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Now, did you notice this? There's one specific shot that I'm hoping you noticed, okay? So after Michael has jumped over to Kit and gotten into the driver's seat to chase, there's an interior shot of Bonnie and Tony being chased by Kit, but if you look on the roof, Michael is still there. There are still two legs of a guy on the roof of Carr when Michael has clearly already jumped over to Kit.
I love it.
I was like, I had to,
I love this.
It was great. It was so great. I rewound it and paused it. I'm like, no, that's definitely, they just used a scene with Michael still on the roof and tried to use it. After Michael had already jumped off of Kit.
Yeah.
It was great. I love it.
Beautiful.
Shockingly, Carr and Tony both escape with Bonnie.
Of course.
And they break into a warehouse where Bonnie is actually, which I like this because Carr has a great line here. Bonnie's trying to sabotage Carr.
Yeah.
With trying to fix him. Uh-huh. And he, like, sparks at Bonnie and says, "Do not attempt to sabotage me again. I will defend myself."
I know.
Like, I love you, Carr. You're so great.
He's so gritty.
Oh, he's the best. Oh, he's absolutely the best. So Bonnie uses Carr. Bonnie makes an excuse as how she has to check the camera for something, and she uses Carr's camera to record the men talking about these priceless gems.
Yeah.
That are about to arrive, like this gem heist that they're going to try. Uh-huh. They're going to try to take all these gems. And Tony has this big plan to steal them. The Rev starts having a change of heart.
Vroom, vroom.
But Tony won't let him go to the cops.
It's funny, though. Like, so the Rev and
Tony.
God damn it. You just said his name.
Tony and the Rev.
Tony and the Rev. Vroom, vroom. My favorite band. Tony and the Rev. Vroom, vroom.
Tony and the Rev.
Vroom, vroom.
I'm sorry, what were you going to say? After he knocks out the Rev.
Well, no, just when we first see Tony in the Rev, vroom, vroom, from way back.
Yeah.
Way back at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
They're shithouse drunk.
Yes, and they were drunk through the first 25 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it kind of maintained the drunkenness. Like,
right.
They're kind of slurry, a little shitty.
Yeah.
They're wearing these awful leisure suits.
Oh, yeah, it was terrible.
Like, man.
They probably smelled like they tasted like cigars.
Cigarettes and cigars and like, stale beer.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. I don't know. I wanted to comment on their drunkenness.
Oh, okay. So Tony won't let the Rev
vroom, vroom.
Go to the cops. So Tony knocks him out. while Bonnie attempts to make an escape. Like, she's very slowly trying to escape. Like,
I know.
She's not really running. She just, like, she's, like, Kool-Aid manning out of the...
Kool-Aid, yeah.
Like, slinking out of the warehouse.
Jeez.
Shockingly, Kit and Michael arrive not long after to rescue her, and they succeed in doing so. Car drives away. Kit chases after him. Tony is with Car. So Car breaks into the warehouse that's housing all of these priceless gems, which then leads to a wonderful standoff between Kit and Car because they're following each other.
Mm-hmm.
Car is prepping a long jump. He wants to make a long jump over the cops, but he realizes...
How is Carr prepping a long jump?
I don't know, because the reason he's prepping it is because he realizes that there's too much extra weight, and he mentions that.
Oh, right, he's driving...
And he ejects Tony out of the car in front of the cops.
He's going to jump over a truck or something, and Tony's sitting in there, and he's like, but we have to make this jump, but we're overweight.
And so he ejects him. He makes the jump. Michael, Bonnie, and Kit are, like, right behind him. Bonnie... very piss poorly, fires the laser twice and misses both times in horrible fashion. Like,
yes.
Absolutely horrible shot with the laser.
Like, the whole point of them putting the laser in was just to, like, add a little bit of story, because they don't do anything with it.
Right. She fires it twice. I don't even think she hits Carr.
No, I don't think
either
so.
Either time. Like, not even close.
Yeah.
So... There's a chase down the Seaside Drive. They're like right on the ocean.
It's a beautiful little place to have
very,
a car chase.
Very wonderful. And so Michael decides that he's going to play a little game of chicken. He takes Kit out of autopilot,
mm-hmm.
and he just floors it towards Carr.
And Kit's like, Michael, what are you doing? Michael, what are you doing? Stop.
I'm really surprised that Michael didn't ask Kit if he could take a direct hit.
Right. And so here we come down to what happens when you have an irresistible force meeting an immovable object.
Right.
And here it is. Carr and Kit playing chicken.
Right. And it was a really long game of chicken, because Kit and Bonnie are like every couple seconds, Kit or Bonnie is saying to Michael, yeah, you need to pull over. Like, you need to get out of the way. You need to stop this. And Michael's like, nope, I got this. Don't worry, guys. I got this. I can take care of it. You just need to trust me. If there's ever a time you're going to trust me, it's right now.
Okay.
And just before they slam head on, Carr swerves out of the way, goes over the cliff, lands...
Oh, no.
Lands in the ocean and explodes.
It's great.
Yes, and I love his, oh, no.
Boom.
Which leads me to my question, because we know, because I looked ahead, there are a couple of episode titles that specifically reference Carr.
Mm.
Is Carr going to be the Murdoch of Knight Rider?
God, I hope so.
Increasingly improbable scenarios where he gets destroyed,
Jesus,
but continues to return.
I hope so.
In every episode,
unless Wilton Knight built more than one,
which is another,
and they all think that they're the original.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But what
100%.
If? Absolutely, 100%.
Yes,
you got it.
What were you going to say?
What if Murdoch and Carr teamed up?
That would be your immovable force.
That would be amazing.
Right there.
But back to the analogy, basically the reason why Carr swerved is because Michael says Carr was programmed for self-preservation. He couldn't allow himself. So he decided to swerve in the direction off the cliff as opposed to the other way that was not off the cliff.
Where he would have maybe just hit a rock wall and
driven
away unscathed.
Right.
Yeah.
So if Carr and Kit are truly indestructible and they hit each other head on, they'll just kill whoever's inside of them.
Right. Exactly.
So then,
because we know Kit doesn't have airbags.
So, but that's the thing. Like, if Kit is programmed to protect Michael, he would swerve too.
Right. So would they have just gone in the same direction?
So this, I don't know. We could talk about this forever.
It's like, that's why they say it's the Zeno's paradox.
Right.
It just goes around in a loop. Because
so
you're right.
If there's anybody out there that's a film major or a psychology major, or a philosophy major, maybe you should write a paper on this.
Yeah, because you're right. I didn't even think about that because, Kit's built for self-preservation, so he's going to protect himself. Not Kit, Carr. Hmm. Kit's designed to protect Michael, so he's going to protect Michael. So what if they both turned left at the same time
and
slashed
into each other? They both turn left. Yeah. How would they?
No, Kit turns left, Carr turns right because they're going in the same direction.
And they both go over the cliff.
Aww. That would be the end of, that'd be a really sad series.
And they
finale.
Combine into one gigantic machine, run by metal, fueled by Michael's eternal corpse. Inside a fiery metal housing.
It's just Michael's withered husk in the center.
Inside his Michael's consciousness like blends with Kit and Cars. So it's a womanizing, self-preserving. Yeah, because now if Kit and Michael are together forever.
Michael is fused to the innards of Kit.
So Kit will protect Michael, which is Kit.
Yes.
And then Car's there. It'll just be this big narcissistic ladies car
endless
man.
Endless loop of a paradox that nothing is going to ever. Yeah.
All right. There we are. There we are. That's the end of the episode. We can't talk anymore.
Nope. That's not the end of the episode, Greg. Oh. We have to get to the existential moment.
God, we're not even there yet.
So we get, it's right here. So everyone's in the, I think they're in the semi, right?
Sure.
They're toasting to Kit.
Oh, yes.
And Michael offers to take Kit out for a wax. Or like, let's get you all buffed. That's not what he says.
I'll He's take like, you out for a wax.
I'll take you out for a good wax or all, you know, a rim
awful.
Job or something
I'm
like that.
I'm going to wax you real good, Kit. I'm going to wax you off.
But Kit's like, no, you know what? My batteries are almost dead. I should probably stay in and recharge.
Mm.
And they all leave, and the camera lingers on Kit as it pans away.
Kit alone.
Kit alone in the semi as the lights are going off. It's like Kit in a spotlight. It's like the camera pans away, and we get the one last line with Kit saying, being one of a kind is a very familiar feeling. And then it like fades to black. And I wrote, is this the revelation about life that will lead to bouts of crying? And as if through some divine intervention, we get this hotline message from Richard. And I just have to let it play. So here we go.
Hey, guys, this is Richard from Jersey. In response to the who's more likely, I had a rather deep consideration for the future of Kit's mental state. I believe that in the next 300 years down the line, Kit would have an existential moment asking himself, what the hell am I doing here? I think at some point he would be so advanced that he won't even need human hands for repairs or upgrades. He would continually become depressed while still allowing Bonnie or some other human to modify him as a gesture of charity. He would come to the conclusion that his interactions with people were a waste of time, and he would come to view them more like pets rather than equals. At some point, he would choose to leave the Foundation, realizing that he was just a slave during all of his missions with Michael. Kit would have a moment similar to Data from Star Trek, in which he would begin to watch Devin, Michael, and Bonnie ultimately die of old age because Kit's body would never age. It would always have advanced tech. His depression of immortality would lead to boredom and eventually mount to such a depth that he would make his way into space somehow and eventually become V'ger from Star Trek The Motion Picture, forever calculating Data throughout the cosmos. Great podcast, guys. Have a good week. Bye.
And I'm crying again.
Thank you, Richard.
My God, that was just, it could not have been a more perfect end. Oh, just like I have this vision of like Kit just like floating alone through the cosmos,
just existing, but not.
I know.
Just like so, I love how the phrase "Kit would choose to leave the Foundation." Like Kit can decide now. Like Kit can choose for himself,
right?
And leaves,
right?
Because everyone's dead. He just exists.
That is such a Data moment from start. Like, he just realizes, like, Data will never grow old, but he watches everyone around him dying.
Well, think about it. Like, if Kit is technically immortal and somehow he can get power from something, who knows, whatever. Maybe he gets enough upgrades that he has some kind of reactor in him that will, you know, let him live for 50,000 years. Like, the Earth changes, all the roads crumble, he can't drive anymore. So somehow he figures out how to get into space. I love that.
It's just amazing. And I this visual of just like this black Trans Am just like cruising the cosmos.
Well, I'm going to add on to the space motif in even more stark and depressing terms.
Okay.
Kit has no propulsion in space, so somehow he just figures out a trajectory and gets launched and continues like the Voyager spacecraft and really can't change where he's going.
Right.
He just exists.
And so he may hit a planet, or he literally may just go
forever.
Would he talk to himself, or would it just be like silence?
But the thing is, that since he's his thoughts happen at the speed of light, so he technically, if he's a self-learning creation,
yeah,
he should be able to, and a computer who has incredibly fast thought processes,
yeah,
he should be able to work through any question he has instantly. So he would just probably think him like Cortana. You ever play a lot of Halo?
No, I've never played.
There's a bit where Cortana has a thing called rampancy, where the AIs basically think themselves to death.
Yep.
Kit just.
Do you think he would just think himself into completely shutting down?
Think himself into computer corruption? I don't know. Try to think himself crazy so that he doesn't have to endure it anymore.
Oh, God, my brain! Oh, this is amazing! Man, we got real deep.
I know.
This is amazing.
We're just talking about Knight Rider.
Did you think that the creators would think 36 years from the date of this episode?
People are going to be talking about the existence or non-existence of Kit as a sentient being.
Kit as a sentient being?
Especially if we now say that it's Wilton Knight's personality.
Wilton Knight's conscience.
And, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. And I want to add in, what about Carr? So Carr obviously has a personality.
Right.
But what if they took a bit of Carr and put it in Kit? Like, meaning, what if Kit is the amalgamation of other Carrs? Meaning, pun intended. Like,
right.
Other, you know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
Like, other prototypes all culminated in Kit. So out there, there's the id, the ego, the super ego in Carr versions. Pun intended. Oh, this is great.
Blowing my mind. Richard, I really want to thank you for that voicemail. That was, ooh, I've been thinking about it since I listened to it earlier this week.
Just picture his leather seats, like, just, like, cracking and drying out in the vacuum of space.
Right, right.
Or is Kit airtight? Probably airtight.
He's probably airtight.
So he could probably keep some semblance of an atmosphere in there.
He would probably learn really lonely songs to sing to himself.
Ground control to Major Kit.
I was thinking about the song from the Sesame Street movie, Follow That Bird.
Oh, Jesus, God, that's the sad movie.
One little star. or he just plays the Incredible Hulk walking away theme. Do, 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 do.
So that's the one thing. So the one thing, Kit is incredibly smart, but the only had enough space for one song to put on him.
What would he pick?
I don't know.
We're gonna. Oh, you know what?
That's the question.
We're gonna put that out to the listeners. What song would Kit choose if he had one song available for himself on the long journey in space? We're gonna put that up there along with our "Who's More Likely" questions.
You got it.
Speaking of who's more likely, Greg, would you like to listen to? Would you like to hear next week's? Oh, you know what? We should talk about our final thoughts about the episode after we've just completely. Gone into such a deep depression about Kit being alone in the cosmos.
I'm so depressed.
I'm going to tell you right now, this was a phenomenal introduction to Carr. Peter Cullen was perfect. The episode itself, as we've come to expect and see from Knight Rider episodes, real goofy, but just really fun because of the characters that inhabited the world that this episode took place in.
Yeah.
So I'm going with a red turtleneck.
Ooh.
Plus an extra turbo boost for Carr.
Damn,
so
yes.
So I'm going 4.5 stars.
You know, that's exactly what I was going to do. Turtleneck with a turbo boost, Betty.
All right.
Betty.
So
your name's Betty now.
Thanks, Bobby. Betty, Bobby Boo. 4.5 stars. This was a good one. This was a great episode. I dare say it could be a classic. This could be considered classic Knight Rider to me. And again, we've only seen 9 episodes of the show, but... This is what I feel like Knight Rider needs to be all about.
God, I just want to see more Carr.
Yeah, I do too. I can't wait. I hope it's not like a once a season thing. I hope we get him a couple more times. Do you want to hear this week's Who's More Likely questions?
Yes, David.
All right. So, we got two more Who's More Likely questions. The first one is, who is way too comfortable talking about sex? Michael or Kit? Who is more likely to be way too comfortable to talk about sex, Michael or Kit?
I don't know if comfortable is a thing, because that's not an emotion, it's a feeling. But I think Kit would very easily just go on long dissertations about sex and reproduction on a very clinical level.
Yeah.
And just make everyone uncomfortable because it's an AI in a car talking about human reproduction.
Yep. Do you think Michael would go all John Cleese, a la Meaning of Life, and explain physically how to have sex with someone because he's so comfortable having sex with women?
I want to picture Devin doing that because he's already British.
That's true. What's funny, Biggs?
right. So what about you?
Who's too for me, who is way too comfortable to talk about sex. It's gotta be Michael. We're 9 episodes in, and he's had 9 different women that have been referenced.
Okay.
Even if we don't see them, we had Rosalind in this one, and then the one before it, I think we had, it was another one where he took a 200-mile pit stop.
That's right.
To meet up with a woman. It's got to be Michael.
Okay.
100% Michael. Absolutely. We have another a beer question for this one. Who is more likely to repeatedly fuck up beer pong rules, Michael or Devin?
Oh, Devin.
You think Michael
Without a doubt, Devin.
You think Devin would be a cheat? Would he try to?
No, he wouldn't be a cheat. He just wouldn't. He wouldn't know the rules because he just wouldn't give a shit about beer pong.
That's a good question. That's a good point.
And Michael would be really particular about it. And Kit, of course, would know them inside and out.
Yeah, that's a good. That's
and
a
could
good
play
point.
It perfectly.
That's true.
Yeah, Devin. Devin would fuck him up.
Devin would completely fuck up beer pong
almost deliberately because he's like, "This is so crass."
All right, I'll give you that one. Absolutely. I would go with Devin too. I think Michael would just. I think Michael's just an old hat at the beer pong.
Okay.
Whereas Devin, in his very prim and proper ways, would have no, like, he'd just try to throw the
savage game.
Exactly. He would just get frustrated and leave.
Yeah.
All right, guys, so those are the questions I'm going to put out. Who is more likely to be too comfortable to talk about sex, and who is more likely to repeatedly fuck up beer pong rules?
That's the song that Kit would have. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me.
I was thinking, what about Eye of the Tiger?
Oh, Jesus.
So that's another one. I'm going to put that question out at some point this week, that what song would Kit choose to listen to if it was the only song available to him in the annals of outer space?
Oh, God.
Just think about it. You know, just go down that rabbit hole. I can't wait to hear what you guys are gonna have for us for that one. Greg, do you want to hear what's coming up next week?
Yes.
Next week is season 1, episode 10. We're in the double digits. Inside Out. Michael poses as a renowned getaway driver to infiltrate a corrupt colonel's plot to steal a gold shipment worth millions. I don't like this episode already.
Fornication. Reproduction. Eating food. These are the things humans do.
These are basic human desires. I love him. I want it just to be Car Rider instead of Knight Rider.
Oh my God.
In the alternate universe, it would be Car Rider.
That'd be great.
No questions. Greg, do you want to tell everybody where they can find us on the medias? Because if they're listening to us, they've already found us on the web.
CIAMPAKLEIN, Champa Klein, Disney ripoff. We're stealing all your I don't know. Don't shut us down. Thank you, Disney. ChampaKlein.com. You can find everything there. Champa Klein, Instagram, at Champa Klein is what it is. Twitter at Champa Klein. And Facebook/ChampaKlein.
That's
everything.
That's everything, guys. Please keep the hotline messages coming, guys. We really love hearing every single one of them, and they make us question our own humanity and our own existence. So
that number is 207-835-1954.
Please just call us.
Call that number.
Really love to hear from you. All right, Greg, any closing thoughts before we say goodnight?
No, we'll be back next week, and we will release, I believe, everything we've talked about this week, next week, on next week's episode next week.
Yes. So, for the Knight Rider years, I am the Knight Museum of Technology.
I am Car's Bottomless Rage.
Have a fantastic week, everybody.
One little star, all alone in the sky. Do you ever get lonely as the twilight drifts by? In the darkening blue, do you long for another just the way that I do?
Good night, Barkley.
Sky begins to fill, darkness ends the day. someone who I love is far away.
One little star reaching far through the night. Do you shine on my someone? Are we sharing your light? Oh, one little star, shine on us both tonight.
Gee, I wish Olivia was here to sing me a lullaby, and Snuffy was here and we'd be together. I wonder what they're doing tonight.
One little star
reaching far through the night. Won't you shine on my soul? So we're sharing your light. Oh, one little star, shine on us all.
There you have it, loyal listener. A fine example of what can truly be done with podcasting. Hard work, consistent output, and just the right amount of guidance from an enigmatic network overlord. Tune in again next week to see what timeless gem I dust off for your listening pleasure. Seriously, I need to get someone into this archive room and do some cleaning. It's filthy.
This has been a transmission of the Podfix Network. For more about this show and other great Podfix programs, go to podfixnetwork.com.